Can't stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Let's ride!
They're going to play this evening.
Oh.
Ladies and gentlemen.
It's 6:55. I feel like, you know, we go on earlier because I just need more time. We all need more time. And I figure that it's good to get a little bit of a head start because then at 7 o'clock everybody's actually here and all that other shit and who the hell knows? But we're chilling out. I see Rogi in the chat room. What's going on? So we have some early people here. Good. I'm glad you guys are here early. That's great. Matt is here. We're chilling out. And I thought that aside from loving this song, Que Sera by Wax Taylor, what's there really to say? Whatever will be, will be. Whatever will be, will be. Tomorrow night, we're going to have a new president-elect in this country. And as Michael Savage said, tomorrow night, the world, the country changes forever one way or another. Chris Ann Hall is going to be on with us at What's Going On, Teddy K. And, oh, Rogi is Pierre from France. So what's going on, Pierre?
Oh, bonjour.
Pierre, do you, is everybody over there just in France just waiting with bated breath to see how everything's going to go down over here in the U.S.?
They probably don't like Hillary Clinton.
I can't imagine. Well, listen, these lefties are going to love Hillary Clinton. They just stick together. Listen to this. Now, everybody, before we got off last week, of course, we were sitting on a Friday night, and we're thinking about all the things that were going to happen. We're talking about all these converging storylines. We're talking about the NYPD. We're talking about child sex slavery and human trafficking and all this stuff. All these things, these cultish, occult-leaning things that are coming together, and all these storylines that were starting to overlap with each other. You know, and of course, it all happens around the eye of the storm. There's nothing happening around Hillary Clinton. She's got like this... She's got a semicircle of protection around her, but all the people around her are being swept up in this tornado. It's like a vortex of craziness and crime and underhanded dealings and these dark. You remember when performance art was like interpretive jazz dance and had nothing to do with blood and piss. And pentagrams and, semen. You remember when it had nothing to do with people lying in coffins of blood and having their tits cut off in ceremonial? It wasn't real tits being cut off, but it was like cakes that look like you. Do you remember performance art being like, oh, it's performance art? All the apologists on the internet when you're like, this is fucking weird with Podesta and all this shit that's popping up. And you're like, is anybody else feel uncomfortable with this? But of course, all the artsy leftists who have abandoned anything that resembles religion or, you know, anything like that for so long, when you don't have that grounding, then of course anything could just be anything. Anything's interpreted. Everything is relative. Everything is relative. Okay, this is that. That's not weird at all. That's just what people, you know, who control countries do in their at their social gatherings. Does that sound weird to you? So in either case, we're talking about all that stuff. We're talking about all that stuff, and we were saying, what the hell's going to happen? Then, of course, we have all of these people going, these people, like, we played that Breitbart radio interview with, what's his name, Prince, former Navy SEAL, founder of Blackwater. He goes live, and this starts, you know, starts corroborating all the stories we were getting from those unsubstantiated websites. Remember, we gave all the disclaimers that they weren't anything credible. They had bad reputations, but the information and everything looked plausible. So let's keep it on ice and let's see what happens over the weekend. So right off the bat, we were all saying, okay, all eyes on the NYPD, because if they come forward and they say, we are defying the FBI, we're defying you guys, this needs to be uncovered, it has to be uncovered now. So all eyes are on the FBI. What do we get? Sunday, we get James Comey slithering out again like he did in July and said, oh, nothing's there. Nothing's there. I get these two tweets. Now, another round of disclaimers. I've been trying to get anybody to find me any kind of information. I've been looking for NYPD news all day. This is the only thing that I thought was interesting. It comes from Jerome Corsi of WorldNet Daily. You can say if you roll your eyes at WorldNet Daily, fine. But we're following the storyline, and this is the only update I have. Listen to this. Here are two in a row. Honest FBI agents objecting. Oh, no, let's go before that. Sorry. NYPD says, this was 4 hours ago. NYPD says FBI has taken all of the Wiener evidence, the 650K, the evidence, to D.C., FBI tells NYPD to drop case. Repeat Dallas, November 22nd, 1963. Obama-Hillary coup alert. I don't know why the JFK assassination date, but NYPD says FBI has taken all. Now, I'm looking. Where's the NYPD that said this? Where? Where is it? We're supposed to have something. And then Jerome Corsi says right after that, honest FBI agents objecting were forced into early retirement. Wiener's 650,000 emails include Clinton sex blackmail evidence on members of Congress. Clinton sex blackmail evidence. Members of Congress. Because, of course, what they were saying was that what happens in places like in Lolita Island with Jeffrey Epstein's plane and the Lolita Express and Pedophile Island and all of these energy-sucking circles... They, you know, you need to make sure that people are not saying anything. So, of course, I mean, it sounds only logical. You take pictures of people in compromising positions. You put up a type of collateral that nobody would be willing to lose. Okay, you're not making a deposit of a couple of $100,000. I mean, because then what the hell is $100,000 to these people? Even a couple $1 million. You need to put damnation on top of them. And apparently... these blackmail photos that were kept in confidence to be able to hold against people instead of if they ever wanted to come forward or, you know, drop a shoe on someone. I don't know. So this is real scary stuff because now we're just going into the fog blindly. We are now going into the fog. What we're doing right now is... envision a giant wall of fog before us. Visibility is zero. We're still on the outskirts of the fog. We're just floating in the water. We're all looking at each other. We're like, all right, it's the night before. Here we go. Polls open in less than 12 hours. We catch a wind. We open the sails. And there we go. Into the fog. There's absolutely no telling what's going to happen. You've got polls coming out saying Trump is surging in places like Michigan and all the battleground states that used to be very firmly red. But of course, what happens there? Aside from, you know, people migrating from one far left state to the other, when a leftist state goes bankrupt, of course, people go to another state that is still kind of stable. And of course, they start voting in more leftists to bankrupt that state as well. Aside from that, we have unchecked, unmitigated immigration. Now, let's go to Let's go to Barack Obama for a second. Now, I know everybody was talking about this today, but when this first came out, I bookmarked it right away. Now, I don't know who he's talking to, some smug bitch. You'll listen to it. You'll hear it. You'll see it in her voice, and it's just everything you want to slap out of a person. Watch this exchange. Hold on. Listen or watch this exchange. Ready?
Many of the millennials, dreamers, undocumented.
Now, I don't know who she is, once again, but you're just going to see the smugness, the smudgeness that makes me want to go nuts. Nuts. Listen to this.
Humanity. Citizens, and I call them citizens because they contribute to this country.
You saw that? You saw that? And I call them citizens because they contribute to this country? Had to drop a bomb. Had to drop a bomb before I left. That, just because you pay a 6-cent tax on a Snickers bar when you walk into a bodega doesn't mean you're contributing to the country. You go to anything you want out there. Any study you want, and illegal immigration is net negative. Net negative. They take more than they put in. Okay? So she goes and she prefaces this. Now, everybody, the people who went to, Obama goes on to say, listen.
Are fearful of voting. So if I vote, will
they should be fearful. They actually should not even be fearful. They should just know it's not my place to vote. I am not a citizen.
Immigration know where I live? Will they come for my family and deport us?
Oh, I don't know. Have they done so yet? When the federal government was shut down in 2013 and our war veterans couldn't go and visit their monuments and their memorials, but illegal immigrants can march on the Capitol. You think somebody's coming after you? You think somebody's really coming after you? Do you really believe, you delusional woman, that you're really in the shadows? That's just your cover story while you just burn your way across the country. Is that really what you believe, that you're in the shadows? Get the fuck out of here. Let's listen to this.
Not true. Okay. And the reason is, first of all, when you vote, you are a citizen yourself, and there is not a situation where the voting rolls somehow are transferred over and people start investigating, etc. The sanctity of—
What the fuck does that even mean? What did you even say, you bumbling wordsmith of a freak?
The vote is strictly confidential.
So the vote is strictly— So pretty much, people, of course, start running to his aid and saying, oh, no, he affirmed it's citizens. Like, no, you understand. You don't understand. Because they're saying he wasn't giving illegal immigrants the permission to go vote. Well, obviously, you're not very trained. Your ears are not very trained to hear the dog whistles go off. Okay, first of all, don't look to President Obama in that situation to figure out what is being said. Okay, this woman, whoever the hell she is, who starts off the interview, or at least this clip, and prefaces it by redefining what citizenship is, okay? She redefined what citizenship was in the beginning of her loaded statement, her question, which was pretty much rhetorical because you knew what was coming next, okay? So it's not so much that President Obama came out and said, illegal immigrants can vote. The thing is that President Obama allowed the interviewer to redefine what citizens are, because according to her, if you crawl over the border and you go to Walmart and buy a toaster, the tax on that toaster makes you a citizen. Okay? This is what's being said. And Chris Ann Hall is coming on in a couple of minutes, and I have to talk to her about this because, of course, what's at stake here is the Supreme Court justice. If we had virile, strong, young, a full panel of Supreme Court justices, and it was locked up in a 5-4 constitutionalist mix, something. Or what if it was 8 justices and we were locked in a 4-4 stalemate for the next 4 years? Fine. I'm cool with the, I will take my chances with an Anthony Kennedy, being a constitutionalist every once in a while. I'll take my chances with that. But the problem here is that you have a Senate whose balance, whose actually the fate of the Senate actually hangs in the balance too. I don't think the House is going to be lost to these liberals. And notice I'm trying to stay away from saying party names because I'm not rooting for Republicans. I'm not rooting for anything. I'm rooting against an ideology from spreading its ugly fingers, its tentacles, into anything deeper. So if you lose the Senate, then it's completely over. It does not matter because there's no filibuster rule anymore. You can't filibuster. I believe that they took out that. What did Harry Reid do? Didn't he take that out? You can't even filibuster appointments anymore if you're in the minority. So if you lose a Senate, it's all over. But if you maintain a Senate, then you're trusting people like Mitch McConnell to have balls, which they do not. They do not. They're not an opposition party. They go along to get along. They do not give a fuck. And if that happens, I don't. And natural law, Maxine Caparato from Colorado in the chat room says it's an insult to true liberals to call them that. They are the regressive left. Absolutely, Max. Thank you for calling me out on that. We are the liberals. We are the liberals. You roll your eyes at that, call in and test it. Call in and test it. Go ahead. What are you going to do? Bring up abortion? Can't anymore. Unbelievable. So here we are standing at the brink, looking into the fog, a big wall of fog, and we're going to sail in together. So let's just tie our ships together here so we don't get torn apart. And let's just make sure. Let's just keep going. Let's just keep going with this. We have to talk about Hacksaw Ridge a little bit later. A few other things here. Here's something else I wanted to bring up we didn't do last week. Free Thought Project, University Studies, how much the odds of Hillary winning the primaries were without fraud. University reports show that the odds of Hillary winning the primaries without fraud were, get this, 1 in 77 billion. Since the beginning of the year, the political election process has exposed Americans to more corruption and vote rigging than at any time in their history. The allegations of fraud and vote rigging even sparked the interest of several academic researchers who published a report on their findings earlier this month. What they discovered in their research is disturbing. What the research shows is that Clinton's sweeping victories could not have been possible without fraud without fraud on a massive scale. As Alexander Higgins reports, one of the statistical models applied by Stanford University researcher Rodolfo Cortez Barragan to a subset of the data found that the probability of the huge discrepancies of which, quote, nearly all are in favor of Hillary Clinton by a huge margin, end quote, that's probably right down to the coin flips. You remember the coin flips? Was statistically impossible. Didn't she win like 6 coin flips in a row? And that, quote, the probability of this happening was 1 in 77 billion. 1 in 77 billion. That's off of the Free Thought Project. Go check them out. University reports show odds of Hillary winning. Just go, whatever. So there's that. Hold on a second. Let me read a little bit about our guest's bio tonight before we bring on Chris Ann Hall. Matt, you excited to talk to Chris Ann Hall again?
Usually you do all the talking.
Well, if you hear anything, man, just jump right in because that's it. And we have a lot of good stuff to talk about after this call. I just want to get some of this out there. Tomorrow we're going to do the 7 o'clock show. We're also going to do a 9 o'clock broadcast as well. So, of course, if you guys are subscribed to the channel, you'll get the alerts when we're live and when we're whatever. So be on the lookout for that. Tell anybody who you think would gain from the conversations we have about the channel, and hopefully they call in. So, or hopefully they subscribe. Here's Chris Ann Hall. Chris Ann Hall is an attorney and former prosecutor who travels the country teaching the Constitution and the history that gave us our founding documents. Chris Ann will connect the dots for you like no one else will. Okay, this is from, you know, because she teaches the program. Chris Ann is a disabled Army veteran, a Russian linguist, a mother, a pastor's wife, and a patriot. Born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri, she received her undergraduate degree in biochemistry from Blackburn College in 1991 and her JD from the University of Florida, Levin College of Law, and is a former Russian linguist for the U.S. Army. Chris Ann worked as a state prosecutor with a prominent law firm defending religious liberty and the First Amendment and First Amendment rights. Chris Ann lives in North Florida with her husband, JC, a pastor, former Russian instructor for the U.S. Navy, and their adopted son, Colton. So she is going to be on with us in just a minute. In fact, let's just call her now. Let's just call her right now. Where is my Skype? Here we are. Chris Ann Hall. Okay, let's call her. And joining us live.
Hello.
Hey, Chris Ann, how are you? Joining us live right now is Chris Ann Hall for her third appearance on the show. Great to have you, Chris Ann.
Well, thank you. Great to be here.
Well, you know, I know that you're having some problems with connections out there, so we're just going to stick with audio tonight. But
yeah. I live in the middle of nowhere, so.
Well, at least you get around a lot, so that's good. But, you know, we just read your bio, and the first thing I want to ask before we get into the real questions I have for you is, you talked about how your past, you have a past of defending First Amendment rights. Where do you see the First Amendment coming under a fire under either a Donald Trump or a Hillary Clinton presidency, and who do we have more to be fearful from?
Well, you know, it depends on which aspect of First Amendment you're really talking about. Now, I don't want to plan on making any real predictions, but I don't really know a lot about Donald Trump's platform on free speech. I don't know that I've ever actually heard him speak things about that, but I can tell you that Hillary Clinton has said that she believes that all of the rights in the Bill of Rights are subject to reasonable regulation. And that's very, very concerning to me. And I believe that you're going to see a real, we're seeing these trends in America now, these attacks on the First Amendment, specifically freedom of speech and religious liberty, in the realm of attacking the pastors and attacking speech and attacking people based on their beliefs with homosexuality and stuff like that. We have the American Bar Association has passed an ethics amendment to the ethics rules through the American Bar Association that literally prevents attorneys from even being members of certain organizations, and they cannot even speak to their clients about certain religious things and certain matters of conscience. And so, given the trend that we have, I think that the attacks on the First Amendment are already pretty egregious, and the matter will be, will we have someone that will stop it? I think the biggest question is going to be who's going to be on the Supreme Court.
And that's exactly the main line of questioning I have for you tonight. Now, we're going to get around to that. That'll be the coup de grace, the Supreme Court. But the first thing I wanted to ask you was what your reactions to James Comey's announcements, all three, July, the reopening in October, and then, of course, the November double juke letdown. What do you see about this? Let's just start in July, where he goes out there for 13 minutes and rattles off all the reasons why she should be indicted and all the reasons why she will not be indicted. Let's just start from there. What were your reactions?
Well, it was absolutely amazing to me. I actually am a former member of the military intelligence. I was in the Army and military intelligence, and so I am very familiar with all of the documents that Hillary Clinton would have had to sign, the training that she went through, and the knowledge that people are made, I mean, you can't get through classified documents. You cannot even get a secret clearance without actually having this kind of training. So if she had a top secret clearance, she had this training. And it's come out later. We have a dentist here, by the way, an orthodontist in Boca Raton, Florida, who did a Freedom of Information Act request of the Department of Justice, and they accidentally sent him classified documents, and amongst those classified documents were the very documents that Hillary Clinton signed, saying that she'd had this training. So now that we know, this was pre-reopening of the investigation, by the way. We know that Hillary signed those documents, that she got the training and she knew what classified documents were. And so when I heard what Comey had to say, for me it was very offensive on many levels. First, on the surface level of, hey, we have members of our military intelligence community who are in prison right now serving time for doing less than Hillary Clinton did. And then realizing and knowing the statute does not require willful knowledge, does not require intent. The statute itself requires only gross negligence. And to hear Comey go on and on and on about how grossly negligent Hillary Clinton was, but we're not going to prosecute her, was offensive on a legal level. And then from a constitutional level, for me to understand that what we have now is we have such an incestuous investigation going on here, because the Department of Justice and the Department and the FBI and the Secretary of State are all under the same umbrella in the executive branch. So you not only have the government investigating itself, but you have the department investigating itself. And that, by the way, throughout history has been proclaimed to be tyranny all the way. And so it was very offensive on many, many levels. I think what was crazy to me was we heard James Comey say that we're not going to prosecute Hillary Clinton for gross negligence because we don't want to be a place in America where people are criminally prosecuted for negligence, which is a big fat lie. We prosecute people in America for negligence all the time. I'm sure that every state in this union has a criminal statute for manslaughter, which is based on gross negligence, on culpable negligence, which is based on negligence. There are people in prison right now on crimes that are solely based on negligence, not to mention the fact that we, like I said, we have military people in Leavenworth serving time under the very same statute that Comey says we can't prosecute Hillary Clinton for. Mm.
Now, you know, going on, this pretty much puts it all into a nutshell for me. But the next thing the next term that comes to mind that I've heard floated around a lot, but it all goes back to Mark Levin the last week and a half, constitutional crisis. Could you put into terms for the people watching and listening on the podcast afterwards, we've heard that term a lot, and would you be able to explain how a constitutional crisis may arise if we follow the storyline that we're on right now, and the conclusion is Hillary Clinton is elected president tomorrow night? What?
I don't even mean to laugh, but we're already in a constitutional crisis.
Okay,
Hillary Clinton is irrelevant to our constitutional crisis.
Okay, so then color in the picture for us. Explain exactly how we are in crisis. Just maybe take the top two worst things to hone in on right now.
All right, well, first and foremost, the spending. Congress, under Article 1, Section 7, Clause 1 of the Constitution, the House of Representatives alone spends or defunds. We have now created, appropriations rules, so that the Senate is involved in a budget, and the president is involved in the budget. There is absolutely no justification, no constitutional association of the president with the budget whatsoever. The president has no authority to sign a budget. He has no authority to veto a budget. He has no authority to shut down the government if he doesn't like the spending. The president was intentionally kept from the budgetary process. The Congress does not have control of the budget. Only the House of Representatives has control over the budget. Article 1, Section 7, Clause 1 says that the Senate may offer amendments, as in other bills, but that may is permissory. James Madison even goes on to explain, because there was some question about it during the debates, that if the Senate offers an amendment that the House does not like, the amendment is null and void, but the budget still stands. So Senate has no power to filibuster a budget. The Senate has no power to shut down the government. The Senate only offers amendments, and then the House chooses to accept them or not. So when you get right down to it, the fact of the matter is a simple majority in the House of our conservatives could defund anything that the executive branch is doing today that they don't like. So the fact that we run 20 trillion dollars in debt now cannot be blamed on the president of the United States, can't be blamed on his spending. The onus for all the trillions of dollars in debt that we have, and many economists say that it's more like 200 trillion, that is lands solely on the House alone. And so there you have it.
The 200 trillion dollars, that's unfunded liabilities?
Yeah, right. Not to mention the fact that all of these lies that that Congress keeps giving us about these budgets, I don't know the last time we had a budget. We don't have budgets anymore. We have continuing resolutions, which are completely and totally unconstitutional. There's no provision to string along the government in a false economic fashion, continuing to raise the ceiling and have debt.
We talked about that. We talked about that on this show quite a few times over the last few months, how CRs are the worst thing ever and they should be individual bills, because, of course, that's what it just creates, this situation where the entire country could be held hostage for political reasons, like we saw in 2013.
Well, but the only way the whole country can be held hostage for political reasons is because the American people don't realize that the Senate can't shut down the government, and the president has no signatory power, constitutionally speaking, over the budget whatsoever. And because we don't know that, we don't go one step further and know that the designers of our constitutional republic established that for a specific reason. And we don't know the reason, so we don't care. The other real big problem constitutional crisis that we've been in for quite some time in America is really, really highlighted during election years, these presidential election cycles. First and foremost, if you look at the Constitution, the Article 2 contains the powers of the president. And as a matter of fact, you have to get to the last section of Article 2 before you even see listing of the power of the president. For example, the president is not the leader of America. He was never supposed to be the leader of America. That is not his job. The president is only the leader of the military, but only the leader of the military when there is a formal declaration of war. We haven't had a formal declaration of war since World War II. So the president has no authority over the military whatsoever right now, constitutionally speaking. So the president can't fund the troops, because spending belongs in the House of Representatives. The president can't move the troops, because without a formal declaration of war, Congress is the one who raises and moves troops. So we have this false identification of who the president is as far as the military is concerned.
And here we go into the jaws of another election, and with the dog and pony show, and this is the only thing that people pay attention to. The midterms is probably very confusing for people, because I don't think anybody even knows who their local representatives to the House are, to be honest. So it's just, I can totally see what you're saying about this being completely flipped up onto his head, and the most neutered
office in the government has become the most powerful and influential for no reason other than ignorance of the people.
That's right. That's right. We do not have three co-equal branches of government. When Thomas Jefferson was talking about the co-equality of the branches, he was talking specifically about their equality to check and balance each other. When it comes to the powers, Congress was vested with the most power, with the House being more powerful than the Senate. The president was vested with the next level of authority. And then the Supreme Court was vested with the least amount of authority. And we have really, really flipped that on its head. You know, this presidential election, the president can't raise taxes. The president can't provide health care. The president can't do any of these things. These are all powers that are reserved to Congress. And yet we are so fundamentally consumed in the media about who's going to be president of the United States, when in fact, we haven't even had a constitutional presidential election since before FDR.
In what way? Can you explain that? That's interesting.
Sure, because the president is to be elected by the electors. We call the Constitution refers to them as electors. We call them the Electoral College. The 12th Amendment specifies how the president and the vice president are to be elected. The president and the vice president are to be elected by separate ballots. If we're going to be voting and our votes are supposed to be an indication of our electors, the electors are supposed to follow the vote of the people within the state, because then the state chooses the president and not the popular vote, because popular vote is how you choose kings. It's not how you choose presidents. Mm-hmm. And so the vice president, by the 12th Amendment, is supposed to have a completely separate ballot and a completely separate election process. So the processes of electing the president and the vice president are identical in nature, but separate in ballot. And they did this on purpose because they wanted to make sure that the vice president, whose biggest responsibility is to take over if the president has to resign or dies, and he must be vetted in the exact same manner and the exact same criteria as the president of the United States. So when we have running mates, it's completely and totally unconstitutional. Here's the funny thing.
Hold on, Chris Ann.
Still pretends like they're doing it right.
Hold on, Chris Ann. Wait one second. There's some static coming in. Is that on your end? Have you caught a wind over there?
Oh, no. I'm in the house.
Okay. Well, we're getting crackly sounds. Okay.
Oh, sorry.
I mean,
it's... So where did you lose me?
You were just finishing up that last sentence, but it started getting really intense, the crackly sounds. They're separate but equal, because of vetting process and the
right.
whole... So you're right on the point of talking about how the president started choosing his own running mate.
Right. And so now, since FDR, the presidents run, because of the way the political parties run our elections, rather than them being civic functions, they've turned into private corporate club controlled events. We now have presidents and parties who collect who select running mates, which is completely unconstitutional. And the crazy thing is that Congress still pretends like they're doing it properly. So the president of the United States is not elected tomorrow, by the way. The president of the United States will not be announced until January 6th, because popular vote doesn't elect the president. The electors elect the president. Now, it used to be that the electors were to represent the states and pick the president and the vice president in separate ballots. That matched the ideology and the positions of the state. But now the electors, now called Electoral College, are selected by political party loyalty instead of loyalty to the state and to the people. And the electors cast their ballots, and they actually cast two ballots. They cast a ballot for the president and a ballot for the vice president. But it's all fake, because there's only one vice president that you can choose, whoever goes with the president that you're choosing.
Would you be able to technically run for vice president? Would I be able to run for vice president in 2020?
Well, constitutionally speaking, sure.
Hmm. Would they be? Oh, I wonder if they have to. I wonder if I can get on the ballot in all 50 states for vice president. See if that catches any headlines.
That would be pretty amazing, because, you know, when we slipped off of this constitutional election, there was it's very, very strange. There's very little discussion about it. There was very little drama, very little controversy about the fact that we were just leaving behind the 12th Amendment. And the president would now, or the political parties would now choose the president and their running mates.
Very interesting. Now, I want to ask you one question, then I have at least one question from the chat room, from our good buddy Moonlit Matt. But my last question for you, you had started off with it, the Supreme Court. Now, I'm looking for hope. I'm looking for hope somewhere. We talk about all the downsides, but I want to look at the hopes. I just want to know if there's any place. Now, I try to find these silver linings, but all I see is unchecked immigration, which is already turning solid red states blue, and other things of that sort. And once SCOTUS is filled, we're talking about, you know, tens of millions new voters. Not only that, we're looking at decisions on a number of big issues that will pretty much bury the 10th Amendment forever. And I want to know if there's any other constitutional failsafe aside from the fantasy that the Senate would actually have the balls to block appointments for 4 years.
Absolutely. I wrote a whole book about it. It's called Sovereign Duty. And the truth is, the solution to the federal government problem has never been the ultimate checks and balances of the federal government on itself. The solution to the problems that we have with our federal government rest within the power of the states and the local governments. The power of the states exists to enforce the natural rule, rules for naturalization. So the only authority that Congress has as far as immigration is concerned is to create uniform rules of naturalization. Enforcement of that naturalization is left up to the states. ICE is a completely unconstitutional agency because that power was never vested in the federal government. And so all of the immigration problem is not really a federal problem. It's a problem with the states refusing to exercise their authority to protect their people from invasion.
Right.
And if the Supreme Court keeps issuing errant opinions, then it's the states who should be looking at the Supreme Court and saying, look, your opinions do not comply with the Constitution, therefore they are null and void, and we will not operate by your opinions.
Now,
let's
keep it there for a second. Let's say that New York or Kentucky, that anywhere stands up to a Supreme Court ruling of any kind, and they dig themselves down into the dirt and they refuse to move and they say, no, we're not following you. What kind of recourse can the federal government take at that point?
Well, I think the most obvious and the most powerful recourse that they would believe that they have is to deny funding to that state for specific or general purposes.
Yeah, they'll lose their highway money.
Yeah, but see, that's a very dangerous move by the federal government, and it'll only work for a little while, because with that funding comes massive regulation and massive strings. And once the funding goes away, then so do the strings. And then the states will begin to realize that without the funding, they actually work better, they work freer, and they work with a higher profit ratio within the state. And so what we'll see is states losing funding and then proving to other states that they don't need the federal government. And then eventually, Lord willing, we have the states awakening to the fact that, hey, if we're going to be doing this ourselves and the federal government's not funding this, then why do the people of this state have to send money to the federal government to fund something that we're doing for ourselves? And then the states will step up and protect their citizens from federal funding that's not constitutional.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, because I hope that there's some sort of a groundswell of enlightenment like that takes hold on the state level, because all I'm looking for in this election is for some kind of a halting mechanism. You know, I looked at, I know you say you haven't really explored Donald Trump on any real reason or any this, that, or the other, but I'm not looking for a candidate because there's no constitutional candidates. There hasn't been a constitutional candidate in the running for a long time, so I don't have anything there. I am just rooting for a human monkey wrench to throw themselves into the gears and give us a few more years to change the conversation on the ground and try to enlighten people in the way that you do every day. Now, the last thing I want to bring... Go ahead.
I just interject. I did a radio show. I did a whole week on my radio show where I compared the presidential platforms of six presidential candidates to the Constitution. See, I think one of the biggest errors that we have is that we compare candidates to each other. We need to pick up the proper standard and start comparing them to the Constitution. And there wasn't a single presidential candidate's platform that they had published. Now, a couple of them talk constitutional when you do interviews, but their published platform is what we went by. And there wasn't a single presidential candidate with a published platform that was constitutional. The problem is like you said, we need to educate the people. And that's why my book, Sovereign Duty, is so important, because this is the education that we need to get into the hands of the people with the real power. And that's your state and local government, your county commission, your city council, your sheriff, your governor, your state legislators, your attorney general, your secretary of state. These are the people with all the power to shut down the federal tyranny.
Mm. And Sovereign Duty, that is your latest book?
Yes.
Everybody, where can people find that? On Amazon and everything? Anywhere else?
You can get it on Amazon. It's available on Kindle via Amazon. And it's also available, you could go to my website, chrisannehall.com, chrisannehall.com, and see all the other books that we have, because we have children's books, we have other adult books. I have a whole book dedicated to the First Amendment. And we also have training DVDs for the classes that I teach.
Oh, yes. And the children's books are amazing, guys. We were able to review those one night on the air. And that's just such a great thing to get kids starting to think about responsible, responsibility to local communities and know mm-hmm. what their civic duties are. Hell, one last thing before you leave. Here's a question from the chat room. Now, we have a lot of anarcho-capitalists that watch this show who like even more limited government than you do. What are your what are your feelings about anarchy in that sense, as far as go ahead.
I think that government governs best when it governs least and governs at home. The problem is that in order to handle the kind of liberty with that level of self-governance is you have to have everybody who is highly morally based and highly dedicated to the preservation of each other's liberty, not just your own. And that will work if you live in a hermit kind of way. But as soon as society begins to form and you have towns and cities and that sort of thing, it makes it difficult because men are not angels. And because we're not angels and because there are always going to be people trying to deprive other people of their life, their liberties, and their property, the natural tendency of man is always going to be to join together to protect each other. And so when you join together in a community, then you have to have certain powers that are given to that community. But you see, the problem in America is the fact that we have lost the perspective that all the power comes from the people, and that power resting in government can never exceed the power of the individual. So as George Washington said, that the government has no more right to stick their hand in my pocket and take money without my consent than I have to stick my hand in yours. And so we as a people have a responsibility to make sure that as we organize in communities for our common defense and to help each other, whether it's a neighborhood watch or an entire state, is to make sure that we are vigilant and jealous in the protection of our own liberties so that we can maintain the ultimate control over government. You're never going to get rid of government. It's a matter of human nature that people will always come together and form alliances in these ways. Because, you know, think about it. When you come and live in a community, you might be able to handle the local petty thief. But what happens when the band of I don't know, what are they called? Barbary pirates come to your land.
Yeah,
if you have no way to organize for your own common defense, if you have no way to work together for your own liberty, then and no way to prosecute people for violating crimes, then you know it makes society very reckless.
And Chris Ann, I have to thank you once again. I'm so happy that I was able to. I was talking to Janet, and I says, you know, I would love to have her on before Election Day. She said, "How about the 7th?" I said, "Yes, that'd be great." So I want to wish you a safe Election Day tomorrow, and I can't wait to have you back on to talk about, you know, taking the temperature of where we are at that point. It seems like every time you come on, there's been 5 chapters that have been written. So thank you once again, and I hope you have a great evening.
Oh, thank you. I just want to remind everybody that if you're really worried about who's going to be on the Supreme Court, then you should pay more attention to who's in the Senate than who's being elected president.
There you go. So, and there's going to be a lot of those races going on around the country, and then of course in 2018 even more. So, everybody, ChrisAnnHall.com. I have it displayed on the screen. I see people are passing her links around in the chat room, so that's great. Please check her out and all of her great work. And she also has a podcast on iTunes and all that stuff. I listen to it all the time. Thank you so much for your time, Chris Ann.
Thanks. Have them check out the Washington Post article they just did for me on me yesterday.
I didn't even see that. I will go check it out myself.
Yeah. Yep.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care. Well, listen. We're going to be all right. We got... Now, you guys saw me. I know that Max and everybody... everybody had to have seen me smiling a little bit when she... mentioned, you know, the warlords, because of course that's always the first question I know you anarcho-capitalists get whenever you talk about living in a stateless society and all that stuff. Like, well, what about the warlords? So you must have seen the smirk come over my face. But you know ultimately people like me, everybody in the chat room, Chris Ann Hall, we would be able to live perfectly serene, beautiful lives in a stateless world. You know we could. You know we could handle it. It's about educating. Educating. We can do it. And we don't have to be... And, you know, speaking about educators, I want to talk about that for a second. Matt, how do you think she did?
She's right on the money, bro.
You know, Matt, we have new viewers every day. And I got this message on Facebook. I thought it was really great. He's a Green Beret. And I checked him out. Because, of course, you know, there's so much stolen valor out there. So you're just like, okay, well, let me just look through it. And I believe him. And Riku is not his real name, so... He got in touch with me on Friday night. He said, "Love your show, brother. As an Army Green Beret, it's the only thing I can put on to get through to the younger guys. Why? Because it's so relatable. There's a Frank and Matt on every Special Forces team. You guys rock." And then, of course, he went on to say, because I asked him if I can read. I thanked him. I thanked him for his service and all that. And I asked him if I can read it on air because I love these types of things. And he said, "Absolutely, brother, you can use my name. It's obviously not Riku. MSG. MSG. He said, I'm an ODA team sergeant. So to ask Gadget Doc about that. So I don't know if Gadget Doc's in the chat room, but we should ask him about it."
Nice. Yeah. That guy sent me a message as well. I thanked him for his service as well.
This is what I love, you know.
Made me feel good. I'm like, oh, wow, it's Green Beret.
That, wow, we awesome. Have a lot of we have a that's lot of awesome, military we have a lot of military friends now. We really do, and I love getting that that out there.
One of them needs to fucking run for president because that's what we need is a fucking military man.
Not for nothing. Not for nothing. I would have voted Jim Webb. We were watching Jim Webb. I know he's Democrat and all that, but you know, we were watching him. When he was up there with Martin O'Malley and Lincoln Chafee for like 2 seconds and Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And I'm looking at this guy. I'm like, you know, a Navy guy and son is a Marine or something like that. And
I thought he was a Marine.
Maybe he was, but I think he was a like running the Navy at one point, or at least assistant. And I love it.
Shit.
I loved it. I was like, you know what? I would vote for this guy. Not because he has anything, but at least I feel like there's some kind of a sense of real, there's a real person there. He wasn't just an empty suit. In fact, he was the only one filling his suit out. You know, but Brad Meyer in the chat room says, at first it surprised me how many military, ex-military people are ANCAP and hardcore libertarian. Very much so. Listen, if you've gotten into, and you know, we have most of our military's recruiting comes from that heart of America, you know, middle America, the southern states, breadbasket states, all of that. And if you get into it for the reasons that people usually joined, and it was because of duty and love of country and all that, and you know the Constitution, you know what it stands for. You know, we have Liberty Bill, who's on the show last week, from Liberty Bill blog on Tumblr, who's also going to be writing for Gaslight. Gaslight TV should be launched tomorrow, so watch out for that. And, you know, these are people who are ardent lovers of liberty, and they know their history, and it excites them, you know. So I love meeting them. I love that some of them think that this show is entertaining. Now, tonight was a little bit more nuts and bolts. We haven't said anything funny yet, but you know we're going there. And as far as tomorrow night is going to be one of those hang me in my closet type of nights. But but moving beyond tomorrow night, we're going to have to find a way to pick ourselves up, and move on.
Ain't gonna be able to pick me up.
You're gonna be down.
Hillary wins, I'm blowing my fucking head off.
you just learned that you're making that people like the things you do. And you're gonna take yourself away from it all. You know, I don't know. I know it's gonna be tough. Listen, it's good. I'll put you this way.
I'm not saying that Trump is, you know, the cure-all, but he's a better choice by far.
Here's what I wrote. I wrote this on actually, you know what? Let me take a really quick break. I want to ask this. I want to see if anybody's coming in after us. I want to see if we have an 8 o'clock show coming in because I need to spill over.
Spill all over my face, bro.
This is what happened. Hold on, we got a...
Bro, just spill inside of me, bro.
Spill him. Okay, I think we get to... I guess we get to spill over. This is what I wrote over the weekend, because it was really bothering me. What makes me nervous is not that we're going to elect a bad president, because we have tough times coming and there's no avoiding it. We've been on a path of national suicide for a long time now. What makes me nervous is how, despite everything that has been revealed to us over the last year, the ice cream lickers that make up the majority of the people who intend to vote think this is about a fight between a doting grandmother who has, quote, made some mistakes, end quote, and a bumbling fool who talks like a sailor and disrespects every, and then you know, enter your rehearsed list of people there, and is all the isms and the phobics and the yada yada yada, and of course the speech about, oh, our mothers, our sisters, our daughters, and how can we live with ourselves, blah blah blah.
He's never had anyone whacked, mafia we get fucking
it.
Style.
That's the greatest question you can ask somebody. How many people have died because of Donald Trump? You start off with that question, and it's going to be a lot of fun for you from there on in.
That fucking bitch got more bodies than the Gambino crime family underneath her.
That is because to make the next phase of this historic mess a lot harder, that is going to make, that type of ignorance is going to make the next phase of this historic mess a lot harder for people to grasp when the lid is blown completely off, because the evidence is leading to some very dark places. Now, that being said, this was maybe Friday night. I think this was before we went to Hacksaw Ridge. We put this out here because we still thought that, okay, any night now, some of our brave NYPD members are going to come forward and blow open the entire Eyes Wide Shut operation that is going hand in hand with all the collusion and the selling of influence and the Clintons and all of their friends and their parties and the circle jerks. But so obviously this is a little bit dated. You see, it's like you talk about a 48-hour news cycle. It's like a five-hour news cycle now. It's all gone. If people aren't willing to disappoint some friends and fellow union members and start thinking objectively, then how we spend the next 4 years is really the least of our problems. People, or at least the squeakiest wheels, have become so embarrassingly and dangerously religious about the trash that's been spoon-fed to us by these subversives in government and media. There's no bend anymore, there's no compromise, and the reactions to any sort of resistance is visceral. It comes from the gut. They start screaming. The behavior is purely religious. Religious. They love attacking people with religious beliefs because this and that goes against their religious beliefs. That's pretty much what it is. It's religious behavior. Religious behavior. And if you think I'm talking about the other side, you're wrong. There is no other side. There's reality, and then there's the movie we all think we're playing a pivotal role in. We need to swallow our pride, take our medicine, lock arms, and do whatever we can to do in order to have a place to simply disagree again. Because we're destroying the arena. We're destroying the place where we came to play the game of liberty. We don't even have a place to disagree anymore. And I ended it with this. It seems to me like we've been led to a slaughterhouse, but we've somehow also been made to think that we are the butchers as well. And when you think of it that way, doesn't it make the job of the slaughterhouse owners really, really easy? They don't even have to do the slaughtering anymore. They don't even have to do the slaughtering anymore. They lead us into the house, and we go chop each other up while they're exporting the meat. That's it. They come in to clean up afterwards. They grab their votes. They do their thing. And we are no less happier. But, you know, a couple things in there will lead to this. Now, Glenn Beck today, he said something. I tuned in. He was listening to that Bill Maher quote, how Bill Maher came out and sincerely admitted that he and everybody like him in the media were crying wolf with Mitt Romney, with John McCain, with George Bush. He called them all honorable men. And that life under them as president did not affect his life like life under Donald Trump. Let's listen to him for a second. He listened to Bill Maher.
Attacked your boy Bush like he was the end of the world, and he wasn't. And Mitt Romney, we attacked that way. I gave Obama $1 million to throw a freighter Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney wouldn't have changed my life that much, or yours.
No, absolutely correct.
Or John McCain. They were honorable men who we disagreed with, and we should have kept it that way. So we cried wolf, and that was wrong. But this is real.
Yeah.
This is going to be way different.
And I don't understand. I don't understand millennials.
So you have that. You have Bill Maher pretty much coming out and saying, yeah, we do cry wolf. That's all they're doing. So it's just like, oh, but now it's for real. And in 2020, it'll be for reals. And then in 2024, if there's still a fucking country left, or if we're still called America, it'll probably be the North American Union by then.
No.
We'll probably be using, yeah.
Nope.
I don't know. Who the hell knows?
That won't happen.
But, you know, and listen, I understand. I saw Marianne Hart said, ugh, Glenn Beck. You know my opinions. I think he makes good cereals. I like Pat, and I like Pat Gray, and I like Stu, and I know all of the baggage that Glenn and his emotional irrationality carries around with him, with the crying and the Cheetos all over his face and stuff like that. But you know, this is real. This is real now. And Brad just said, until it's 2020, then it's really real. It's like, you know what? Fuck you. Fuck you. I'm sorry. Oh, okay, so then what's the option? What's the option? You get your way. You get to double down on your mistake for another 4 years. You know, here's the thing. If you're in that two-party system frame of mind, you at least had the feeling of security that, okay, well, you know what? They might be a two-term president. They might be a two-term president, but at least you can count on party fatigue after 8 years. At least there was a time you could count on party fatigue where after 8 years, at least you're going to get a different look, a different color tie. We've doubled our national debt. Our friends hate us more. Our friends like us less. Our enemies hate us more, I should say. We have foreign policy that has just destroyed so much, and it has helped contribute to one of the worst migrant crises in the world that is changing the face of Europe as we know it, and is going to do the same thing over here over the next 4 years. Those immigration projections that Donald Trump touts around are true. After the end of 4 years, some people have estimated up to a 1.5 million refugees are going to be brought into this country that have no sense of what living in a free society is about. They don't care about our principles. They don't care about our history. They don't care about anything. They don't care about anything. Their homes, they are disaffected. They are detached from anything that could have ever have been considered a normal everyday life. They are spiteful. And if any of them know, and if any of them become wise to the fact, aside from those who are clearly infiltrating the masses to cause harm, if any of them become wise to the fact that we're the ones, that our government, not us, our government, as Chris Ann Hall said, the last time that we had a formal declaration of war was World War II. If our government that has run off the tracks is responsible, and in this case, not even really respond. I mean, obviously, there's a military edge to it. There's a military edge to it. But our military wasn't complicit in the destabilization of the area. That was all out of the State Department. That was all shifting people around and destabilization and you know, helping out someone there. You know, it wasn't so much ground forces. It's just covert. It's like we played dominoes with the whole world. It's blamed on us because the people who did it had an American flag pin in their lapel. Because they had the American flag pin in their lapel, it's an American tragedy. This is not what we are. Historically, this is not what we are. And you know, it's just I don't know. And you know what? Onto something else. I need to think. It's a funny thing about national suicide. I was thinking about this yesterday, because think about what's going on in Europe and you know, there's new walls going up in Germany, like double the size of what the Berlin Wall was, because they're trying to isolate new sections that are going to be inhabited purely by Syrian refugees. I said you have a body. Think about a body, okay? You have a country. You have a for everybody out there who thinks that this leftist ideology of how the world is interconnected. I saw this one bastard on Tumblr from Denmark or something like that. Said, "I'm a young Dane and I'm really really concerned about Donald Trump being president." I said, "You know what? Stick to Denmark, okay? Stick to your own shit. Shut the fuck up. We don't want to be like you." We don't want to be like you. That's number one. I hate people from around the world saying, "Oh, this is really going to affect us." Shut up! Okay? Our wheat is not your wheat. Have a better idea. Do something for yourself. Stop virtue signaling so you get a couple of reblogs.
I mean, well, what do you expect? Half those fucking countries...
they need us for defense.
...over for fucking Nazi Germany back in the day.
Half those countries need us to defend. They need good old American capitalism to defend them from the rest of the world. These are the type of cuckolds you're talking about here. So you have a body. Think about a body, a person, which represents a country. It has defined borders. It has an identity, national identity. You can make that case. There's adherence to rule of law. There is laws of the body. There's biochemical laws. There's realities that you cannot defy within a body. before the body becomes sick and dies. And there's also sets of philosophical principles. There's guiding principles of anybody living throughout their lives, whether it be nutritional guides. It doesn't matter. It's all there. You can make the analogy any way you want. It's a perfect analogy. Then you see, of course, the next phase, which is the softening and the progressive disdain for such a system. They don't want, whether that be rigid interpretations of law, constitutional law, what is, should be limited, what should be provided for the masses, how far religious freedom in people's lives should go, and wherever one person's rights ends, where another person's feelings begins. That's where the softening, the cultural decay, and of course, we have things like Hollywood and the infiltration of the collegiate systems here. What college and the entertainment system has, entertainment industries have become to softening up the once defined lines of national identity. Okay, so you have that, and until the country then starts becoming, you know, the consistency and the structure of a waterbed, you know, you push it, it still maintains its form, but after a little bit of jiggling, it's not a, you know, you, every once in a while maybe a leak springs out, but we're not drowning yet. You know, it still has a cell wall, but it's a weaker one. It's a little bit more amoeba-like. And then, of course, you have the next phase that people like Hillary Clinton are talking about. When they go and they talk to Goldman Sachs, and they go and they make speeches in Mexico and this and that for, you know, $250,000 every half hour. They talk about a borderless society, borderless energy, whatever the energy grid thing she was trying to deflect on with the debate that caused more problems for me. What are you talking about, a borderless energy grid? Our energy grid is our energy grid. Free countries do it better. You want to see how energy is in Venezuela right now? We talked about it last week. The corpses are exploding in the morgues because they can't keep the refrigerators on. Okay, this is supposed to be a country that's rich in oil. They can't keep the lights on. You want to share energy with that? That didn't raise red flags for people watching the debate alone? What is this bitch talking about? So then, of course, you have, because of this this progressive, regressive left nonsense, you have a degenerative condition. We feel the need to push the ideal that all things are relative, and we weren't special to begin with. And the only way to march into the future is through uniformity, while calling it multiculturalism. Eliminating the cell wall, finally, eliminating the cell wall and all that genetic material that gave the body its identity and the organs that gave it its functionality. And then, eventually, the body dies due to a host of illnesses. At that point, when your immune system's down, it could be anything. You don't die from AIDS, you die from the common cold. After you get AIDS and it destroys your immune system. Okay? Because there was no more filtration, there was no more defense, there was no more standards. There was nothing left for the body, down to the cellular level, to hold on to, until it is no more. And that's where we're at right now. This is where we're at right now. Take that one to the bank. It's an analogy that cannot be broken. Oh, so we did that. Did the Glenn Beck opening. A little bit of Bill Maher. We talked to Chris Ann Hall tonight. If you guys think that this was a little bit of a dense show, I'm sorry. But obviously we're knocking on the door of something big. I promise you, we're going to be talking about a lot of different things soon. Still didn't even talk about this. Brownsburg police who performs exorcisms. Says the number of people requesting them is on the rise.
I should become an exorcist, bro.
You should.
I'm not afraid of a fucking demon.
You should, dude.
What's a demon going to do to me?
I don't know.
I fucking wish a demon would try and fucking take me and take my shit over or whatever.
I wish a demon would just take my shit over.
It is a growing trend, the demand for exorcisms. Yes, exorcisms, now at an all-time high. That's according to one exorcist who performs hundreds of them right here in Indiana. RTV6's Mike Pelton looked into what's behind the demand.
There are 50 exorcist priests in the United States, two of them here in Indiana, one of them right here in Brownsburg, where Father Vincent Lampert tells me the demand for exorcisms is on the uptick.
An exorcism at its very core is a prayer.
It's not just a movie made for Hollywood, but Father Vincent Lampert, an exorcist at St. Malachy Parish, says it's an inverse relationship.
Faith in God will lead us in one direction, and the lack of faith will lead us in another. So there does seem to be a correlation with people who believe they're experiencing evil in their life at the same time that faith in God is less relevant.
Lampert tells me he gets about 20 requests a week from people who think they need an exorcism. He tells me only about 10% of those people actually do.
Most people, by the time they call me, they've already diagnosed themselves.
With an exorcism, there is no...
I'm possessed!
So says Lampert, who explains most involve less intense prayers to get rid of evil spirits. Full demonic possession is rare. He's performed three of those.
Really?
You know, a lot of these movies that you watch on TV, it's always, you know, in an abandoned house and, you know, at night during the storm, that type of thing. But it's always in a sacred space.
Lampert says the demand for exorcisms is on the rise. At one time, the United States had 12 bishop-appointed exorcist priests. There's now 50 and counting.
There are different ways that maybe evil comes in, somebody being cursed. A life of habitual sin.
And I asked, after taking part in hundreds of exorcisms, how does he handle the pressure?
After one here in Indiana on the way home, you asked, how did I unwind? I stopped at Dairy Queen and had a chocolate shake on the way home.
Oh, God. I thought he was going to say, you know, I just go home, I smoke a joint, I jerk off.
Yeah, all over my face.
That's it. If I was performing exorcisms, I would have to keep masturbation healthily in my life. I just go back home and I'm just like, listen.
I would jerk off all over the person that's possessed. Demons be gone, skeet, skeet.
Oh, God. You know what I have to do? I want to thank you guys.
I want to thank you guys. Letting me sleep for 3 days in the cabin, waking up, you know, every so often.
Every once in a while. So tomorrow night is going to be nutty. I want to thank you guys first of all with the Patreon. Everybody, please check out patreon.com/quitefrankly. These letters have been amazing. Matt Smith's letter made me laugh. I was going to read it on air tonight. A lot of these letters. Andrew Dame's letter made me laugh. Got a couple others too. So good. I love this pen pal thing. It's great. And there's still a few spots open in the 1776 Club and the 1984 Club. Next month is going to be the first month that Matt writes one of the letters for the 1984 Club. So if you want a letter from Matt, especially if it's going, if you want something that might be inappropriate or confusing, it's one or the other. One or the other. It could be inappropriate or...
Or you might, you know, receive something illegal. It could be
completely confusing. Matt, yeah, Moonlit Matt, you weren't watching on Friday night, I guess. On Friday night, I opened up your letter, and I showed everybody. He sent me the outline of his gun on the back. It was fantastic. But I want to thank all my bosses right now. Okay, Michael Wells, Nikki Solis, Andrew Dame, Laura Varis, Matt Smith, Sean Collins. Sean Collins wrote back to me, too, and he said that he likes rum. So whenever we think of what the Sean Collins cocktail will be, it has to be something rum-based. So maybe like a mojito, kind of a hybrid. I don't know. We'll see. Mojito was actually Ernest Hemingway's favorite drink. You'd think that he'd be a whiskey type of guy, but he was always in Cuba, obviously. Papa was always in Cuba, hanging out with his cats. Christian Peppas of the Amatory Murder, they got a new video out. Maxan Caparato for Colorado. Natural Law in the chat room. Eric Reitz, my friend. Jackie Milam for Manassas, Virginia. Great
from
writer.
Where?
Manassas.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, dude, that's you know.
Yeah, that's it.
Bull Run Manassas, Bull Run in Manassas, all that kind of.
Rudy Escarcega.
Battles.
Matt DeFabio, right over there, 1984 Club.
And that's not my real last.
What's your last name?
I don't know. That's my real last name.
DeFabian.
No, it's not. Dr. Berkowitz used to say it like that. It used to bother me.
Dr. Berkowitz, I had him too. And Dr. Brown. Brad Meyer in the chat room. What's going on, Brad? Thank you so much, man. This, and StephanieKBeauty.com. Check out Stephanie. Stephanie is also an amazing pen pal. Kate McCallum, she just got her first. Marianne Hart, she just got her first letter. Marianne's in the chat room. Jenny Lee, good girl, bad girl, Jenny Lee. Gadget Doc, he got his first letter as well. And Perry Little, Stacy and Perry, you guys got your letter as well, but I forgot to thank you guys on Friday night. So I want to thank you guys thrice. Perry Little and Stacy. Perry Little and Stacy. Perry Little and Stacy. I'm going to say that in front of the bathroom mirror tonight at midnight with the lights off and see if you guys appear in the mirror. If Perry and Stacy appear in the mirror at night at midnight, that will be a jolting experience for me, but I will have deserved it. So thank you guys so much, endlessly. Every last one of you, no matter if you pledged a dollar or $5, $17.76, $19.84, $10, whatever it is, you have no clue how much time I put into this, but I love doing it. And the more support we get, the more I'm able to put into it, and the less fear I have of how I'm going to pay the bills, because that's one less hour that I'm not personal training somebody or anything like that. It's not a sob story. It's just the truth. This is where I want to take things. You know, aside from everything we do with the music over here and everything else, I want to keep doing this. I want to keep expanding this. And it's going to grow. It's going to. There's no way it's not. It's what we have here in the chat room and what we have here elsewhere is a lot of fun. Thank you, William. I see William in the chat room. Great show. Love you guys, Mary Hart. Well, thank you guys. Thank you guys so much. Oh, Stacy, they got their letter from me today, too. Oh, everybody got their letters. Excellent. So they have it before Election Day. Keep your wits about you, my friends. Keep your wits about you. That's all I'll say. Oh, Jesus Christ. What else? It's 8:15. We did overtime on a Monday night. We're going to do a lot of overtime tomorrow, so that'll be that. Watched a lot of Saved by the Bell. This is what I'll say, guys. We'll talk about this a little bit more tomorrow. But if you do anything tonight, watch Saved by the Bell. It's on Netflix. Go Saved by the Bell. So refreshing watching this again. It was at a time when we were really, really just... We were able to handle conversations as kids. We were good. We were heading in the right direction. We were strong. We really were strong.
That's because we were still having the ripple effects of Ronald Reagan.
And we were still being raised by the Greatest Generation. Those were our grandparents. They were in their 60s, their 70s, their early 70s. They were still very, very much a part of everything.
Oh, my grandparents weren't in their early 70s.
You know? The problem is that we stopped. I said it before. I'll say it again. I'll say it 15,000 times. We stopped looking for the commies in Hollywood. Once the witch hunts for the commies in Hollywood stopped, it was all downhill from there. Because we had good battles in Congress. We had good battles for the presidency. We had good talks. We had good patriotic people on both sides of the argument, on all sides of the argument, in government that were duking it out. But while we were doing that, and our guard was down in Hollywood and on the college campuses, things got worse. I'm sorry. Just the way it is. I believe that 100%. And go watch this one episode. If you do anything tonight, turn this podcast off. And when you're relaxing, go check out Season 3, Episode 12. Season 3, Episode 12. Okay? That's it. Saved by the Bell, Season 3, Episode 12. And tomorrow, at some point, because it's going to be ridiculous, we're not going to sit here calling states all night and talk. There's only going to be so much we can do. So we're going to keep each other company. When states are called, new projections come out, we'll take calls. We'll have Alex Blitz's call in. We'll have a few people call in. We'll make it really, really awesome tomorrow night. But we'll just keep each other company. But we'll also talk about this episode. And I want to take your calls. I want to see what you guys noticed. Take notes of what you noticed. Any kind of thoughts you had. Any kind of...
if you lament anything, any kind of remembrances of school in the 90s, anything, please watch episode 12, season 3 of Saved by the Bell. It's when Zach is running track. Also notice how Jessie is just the she embodies all of the self-hating white liberal nonsense that we see. The obnoxious self-imposed guilt of the white liberal complex. Just so notice that with Jessie. Okay? And that's all I'll say. Okay? Season 3, episode 12, that'll be part of it tomorrow. I can't wait to get your calls on that. All right. That's
Kelly Kapowski's really hot.
Kelly, oh my God, Tiffany Amber Thiessen. She got our goat. She did. She got our goat. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for the time. You all kick ass. And I look forward to tomorrow with you. We will feel much less alone and much less anxious. Let's do it. Good night.